Hey guys, this is Chris. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up before the episode starts that this is one that we thought we lost. There were some technical difficulties and the original recordings were gone. So I had this backup recording. The quality's not as great, but I listened to it again and I thought it wasn't so terrible that we couldn't release it. So that's what you're going to hear. It's going to sound a little different, but hopefully after a couple of minutes, you'll adjust and you won't even notice. Somebody out there is probably thinking, don't worry about it, buddy. They never sound that great. To which I would reply, thanks for your reassurance, imaginary shithead. Just a heads up. That's what we're working with this week. But otherwise, enjoy the episode. Hey, do you remember Hocus Pocus? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Hocus Pocus. Hocus Pocus is a family-friendly horror comedy about Max, the new kid in town. Only the town in question is Salem, Massachusetts, and it just so happens to be Halloween. Max doesn't put much stock in the local legend of the Sanderson sisters, three witches who were hanged in 1693, but that's until he inadvertently awakens them and quickly realizes he's the only thing standing between them and immortality. Donna, what do you remember about Hocus Pocus?
Well, I remember loving the bananas out of this movie.
All the bananas, just straight out of it.
All of them. Oh my gosh. I know. This is one of the few that I actually have a memory of going to the theater with it, seeing it. And I went with three of my friends, the Ryan girls. And we
shout out.
Hey, Ryan girls, what's up? We all loved it. It was right up our alley. And we, I think, for the next year, just went home and straight just played it like every day. We were the Sanderson sisters. We acted out the whole movie. When it came out on video, we rented it endlessly and just continued to act it out. We absolutely loved the movie so much.
When you acted it out, which one were you?
Good question. I was all of the good lines.
Mm-hmm. A mashup of all the characters.
I do not know how they were friends with me when I watched the movie.
A young Donna Ray giving a real tour de force.
I did all of the parts.
And, such range.
Which was lame because there was three other girls there. And I was like, no, I'll just do it all. So I don't know how they're just wonderful people to have been friends with me. But usually I was Winnie. I was usually Winnie. Okay. Except for during the Sarah Jessica Parker song and her good lines, because the other girls just couldn't quite get the delivery down, so I would do that. And also the Kathy and Jimmy lines that were good, I would do that. And
oh boy.
Inks lines, sometimes I would do that. But,
jeez.
Yeah, I was a real beast at 11, it turns out. So sorry about that. Mm-hmm. I also got into Creedence because of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Wow.
Because I loved the song so much, the Put a Spell on You song. Mm. And I remember telling my parents, they made this song just for this movie, and it's the best song that was ever written. And they were like, Donna, that's not...
Oh, boy.
Okay, we need to have a lesson here. So my dad got Creedence Greatest Hits, and I've been a fan ever since.
What's funny is when I was watching the movie and I was taking notes and it got to that scene, this is garbage. This is my least favorite scene in the movie. And then I put in my notes, I bet Donna loves this. and not like in a shitty way, not like, ugh, Donna loves garbage, but just like, I just had a feeling that this was one of the standout scenes for you as a kid.
It sure was. You bet your bottom dollar.
Carlos, what about you?
I didn't watch this movie often as a child. I maybe saw 15 minutes of it here or there in pieces. Like, I don't have, like, fond memories of the movie. It didn't really, like, magically touch me or anything. But
I wish this movie, I wish Sarah Jessica Parker had magically touched me.
So, like I mean, I'm sure I've seen, like, well, when I went back and saw it, I was like, oh, I've seen most of this movie, but I've just never sat down and watched it altogether. Which actually is true for me for a lot of holiday movies. Like, I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life all the way through, but I've seen all of It's a Wonderful Life.
Gotcha.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. Definitely did not remember musical numbers, though, which there are, what, two of? But, yeah, I remember it being beloved by many, but not by me. Okay. It was just kind of like, oh, yeah, Hocus Pocus, sure, why not, I guess.
Well, so when we talked about doing this, the first thing that came to mind when Donna mentioned the title was Amok, 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 Amok. That clip, for some reason, was the first thing I saw, just Sarah Jessica Parker jumping up and down. And I know it was in all the trailers and the TV spots, and I'm not sure why that stuck with me over everything else. Bouncing boobs, maybe? I mean, I hate to throw 11-year-old Chris under the bus like that, but... yeah, it was a clear memory
what it was.
I had. I also remembered that the Discovery Channel used to have this show called Movie Magic that was all about how special effects were created. And one of the episodes was all about Hocus Pocus. You do, really?
Yeah, I do. I totally watched that show.
Did you happen to see the Hocus Pocus episode?
It seems likely that I might have seen that. Probably did.
It was all about anything
hoax related.
It was all about how they did, you know, the animatronic cat, the zombie, all that, the makeup stuff. And it was before the movie came out, so it was all out of context. But all of these images were really interesting. And so I don't think I was ever dying to see this. For some reason, I had the impression it was more of a girl's movie. I don't really recall why. But like the makeup on Billy in particular piqued my interest enough that I made a point of watching it when I saw that it was going to be on TV. Actually, I saw this on the Disney Channel when it was still a premium network. They were having one of the free preview weekends. Mm. And I think this was like the big Saturday night draw or whatever. And as a kid, I never really got into this. I didn't dislike it. I didn't think it was a bad movie. It just wasn't for me. I mentioned in the last episode that I was a kid who loved being scared. And you know, when we were figuring out what movies to do for these Halloween episodes, it's become really clear that I watched very different movies from you guys as kids in terms of the scary stuff. And I know I've kept pushing for things like, oh, Monster Squad, Night of the Creeps. And you guys are more like, Addams Family. And because Donna, you said you didn't like being scared as a kid, so I can see why this would have been sort of a perfect movie for you. It has like all the trappings and iconography of a horror film without being frightening.
True. Exactly.
And
exactly.
Carlos, you said that like horror just, it wasn't your genre.
Yeah, no, it just never really called out. It still really doesn't. It's not my thing.
Okay. See, yeah. I loved it, especially when I was younger. And some of my favorite memories are picking out like horror movies, you know, just based on which ones had the best cover and staying up all night with my friends, just like, you know, being scared shitless. And I think I also mentioned in the last episode, this came out, this was the same year that I was reading The Shining. So,
oh my God,
there just wasn't a lot here for me. It was a little too flamboyant and theatrical and slapstick, but I was interested in taking another look at it and seeing if it, you know, maybe there were certain elements or merits that I didn't give it enough credit for as a kid. And with that said, we just looked at Hocus Pocus with fresh eyes. So let's see how it holds up. So most weeks, I walk us through the story beats of each film, and Donna and Carlos jump in with their thoughts. But this week, I thought we'd let Donna take the lead on that, just because I think it's probably better served by somebody who really loved the movie back then, and probably still does. You still do, right?
Oh, wholeheartedly.
Okay, so, yeah, Donna, walk us through Hocus Pocus.
All right. We open our tale in Salem, Massachusetts, 1693. Mm-hmm. Young Thackeray Binks awakes with a start to realize his young sister is missing. Frantically, he looks around, but she's nowhere. Then in the distance, a plume of smoke is rising. They're conjuring! She's done for! That was a little extreme, but I think it's fine.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. It's the whole thing.
I was just going to say, I really like the first few minutes of this quite a bit. That opening shot is really cool with the, where you see the reflection of the witch riding on her broom over the water.
Oh my gosh.
That's awesome.
Freaking out.
Yeah. And, John Debney's score is great. The production design of the village is nice. You've got that fog hanging in the air and that quick shot of like Sarah luring Emily away while singing that super creepy song. This I think is all good stuff. I was actually feeling really optimistic in these opening moments because I remembered none of this and it was pretty effective.
Yeah. I just like when the kid runs after his sister in the woods, he like starts to run and then he stops and looks at the woods and then he runs in again. It's like, were you having second thoughts? Like,
I do. How much do I like Emily?
It's like, you know, they are a conjuring. I did say she's done for. Like, there really isn't much hope.
Well, that brother Thackeray decides, no, he's going to run into the woods anyway to find young Emily, who is entranced by three old hags, the Sanderson sisters. Mm-hmm. They have created a potion that will allow them to suck the life out of the little children, thereby making themselves younger and, of course, killing the children. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, okay, two things. First, did you guys know that the actor, every Thackeray as both human and a cat, his voice is dubbed over by a different actor?
Really?
Jason Marsden is the guy that does the voice, but it's I can't remember the guy who actually plays him.
Why didn't they get James Earl Jones? They're a conjuring.
He's a powerful adolescent.
And then I also have to say, so when we meet the witches, right? Okay, so I'm on board. I'm like, oh, this has more atmosphere than I remember. This is kind of cool. We meet the Sanderson sisters, and all the tension just goes, like, I forgot that they're color coordinated, number one. They look like haggard Fanta girls. And it just, like, it immediately goes from something like Sleepy Hollow or The Witches, like that kind of a vibe. And instead it just kind of turns into an episode of The Munsters. And this is when I realized that now more than ever, it's not for me. It's still not for me.
Oh.
I think this is for the rest of the synopsis.
What?
I think this is going to be a theme for the rest of the synopsis. Chris is just be like, this wasn't for me. The whole rest of the way.
No. I mean, I did try to articulate, like, okay, here's sort of what I kind of rubs me the wrong way or why I just can't really get into this. And I'm going to say that some of, you know, my complaints are very top heavy. I mean, I have a lot to say about these early parts of the movie. And then in the interest of not being too repetitive, the further we get into it, I'm not going to have as much to say in terms of just straight up bitching about the film.
Right.
So, I mean, I can just get it out of the way right now. Here's the thing. The director of this is Kenny Ortega, who did the High School Musical movies and a lot of TV stuff. And right before this, he did another movie everybody adores that I really don't, Newsies. And I'd like to watch that one for the show, actually, because I'd really like to change my mind about that, if for no other reason than to have people stop making the face that Donna's making right now when I say I don't like that movie.
The same thing. For no other reason than you still want to be friends with Donna.
And Kristen really loves it too. A lot of people really, really like that movie.
Yeah, I think maybe Kristen and I should just do that episode.
Maybe, I guess. It's,
that works. I never saw it.
All right. Cool.
So we're at the opening credits. Let's go.
Yeah. Thackeray tries his best to stop the witches from eating his sister's soul, but it is too late. Emily's dead, and the witches are younger. And as punishment for interfering, the caring older brother is turned into a cat and made to live forever with his guilt and shame. Of course, not long after that, the townspeople find and hang the Sanderson sisters for, you know, being witches. Before the sisters are hanged, however, Winifred is able to get her spell book and utters one last spell, that on All Hallows Eve, when the moon is round, a virgin will light the black flame candle and bring the sisters back to life for one night so they can finish their spells and live forever.
Mm. Boo! Forever.
And that's when
how sad is it when Binks, like, as now that he's a cat, he tries to get his father's attention?
Oh, so sad.
His father's like, get away, beast!
I hate you! Oh, it's so sad. I know, that made me really... Yeah, poor Binks. Poor Thackeray Binks. At any rate, so now we realize that we are in the exciting modern world of 1993, where Max Dennison, a skeptical L.A. transplant, doesn't buy into all the Salem Halloween nonsense.
Wait, yeah, let's pause here for a second. I just want to mention one line that when how they introduce Max is when the teacher goes, he scoffs at whatever story she's telling about the Sanderson sisters. And she's like, oh, why don't you enlighten us with, you know, you and your laid back California tie-dyed point of view. And like, oh my gosh, it's just the lazy way they fill in this backstory. She may as well just be like, as someone named Max Dennison, who just moved into this town a few weeks ago and is having a tough time fitting in and has a chip on his shoulder about Halloween, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this kind of stuff just, it kind of bugs me. It's very prevalent. You see this all the time. Like when a movie or a TV show starts with someone going, come on, little brother, you remember that promise I made to Dad the day he died that I would always look after you? Fucking no one speaks this way.
Well, yeah, they do in the movies. In movies like this, anyway. So, yeah, his laid-back tie-dye attitude is quickly noted, and his classmates... Put him in his place.
Is not that kind of guy at all, really. He is not laid back California guy.
No, he's not.
He's pretty uptight, actually, too.
Yeah, he is pretty uptight, kind of pasty, but you know.
Oh, did you guys know who they originally offered this part to?
No.
This may be wrong, but this is from IMDb, so there's a 50-50 chance this is total horseshit. But one of the bits of trivia was that they offered it to Leonardo DiCaprio, who turned it down to do What's Eating Gilbert Grape instead.
Oh, that was a good choice.
I know.
That was a good choice.
How different his trajectory might have been.
That's amazing.
Yeah, if he had done this movie, I fucking bet you $5 he'd have won an Oscar by now. Mm-hmm. Because that What's Eating Gilbert Grape was brilliant, and he was so good in that movie, but the Academy hates him. You give him a hocus pocus, a couple of shit sandwiches, a couple of years to cut his teeth, maybe they like him a little bit better.
Okay. Well, I mean, and so the actor that does play Max is Omri Katz, and I remember really liking this actor as a kid. He was on that show Eerie Indiana. Did you guys ever watch that?
Yep.
No. Yeah, that was an awesome show. But so I don't blame him. I just think Max, as written, is sort of a jerk. He's cocky. He thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. You know, I was rooting more for the talking cat. I think that's the more sympathetic character in the movie. And this is just one of those things where, again, I'm just not on board with the director's choices here. I just don't like the way he asked this kid to play Max. I think it's all wrong.
Everything from when we get to 1993 to when he lights the black flamed candle is super clunky, like super duperly. I'm going to feel this emotion now, and I'm going to lay my head down, and now I'll feel a different emotion. Like, you can almost see the director pointing to him like, now you're happy, now you're sad. But yeah, this scene, Like, I thought it was going around, like, you know, fine enough, until he totally just gives a girl his phone number in front of the whole, like, and the teacher's not going, hey, sexual harassment much.
There are so many instances where I felt like, I don't believe you've been around children ever. I don't know that you've ever listened to them. This isn't how they talk. This isn't how they behave. And there's a doozy coming up in just a scene or two. Actually, there's two really, really amazing scenes that are, I mean, they're kind of horrible in sort of like a dated 1993 sort of way, but also like wildly entertaining, you know, in a way that was probably not intentional.
They were, I was incredibly, I did not remember that he just gives his number to her. But once it happened, I remembered thinking, wouldn't that be amazing? God, I wish that would happen all the time. Just stand up in front of the whole class and be like, here's my number, call me. I think every girl wished that that would happen, but it never. I went to school for all the right amount of years, and never once did that happen.
For the right amount of years.
Yeah, I did the whole time. I was legally required to. That never happened. But I do think it's there you go. That's a little bit of, like, lady fantasy, being like, oh, wow, he stood up in front of the whole class. And I just got to look cool and be like, no, you don't like Halloween, so we're not going out.
I like that she gives it right back to him. But and
she does, which is sassy.
Yeah.
I also like that she looks like she's about 4 years older than everyone else in the school.
She is like 22 if she's a day, right? I think she's she's so together. At any rate. So, after he gets shot down in this totally unrealistic scene where he asks this beautiful girl out, Max rides his bike through the cemetery to get home. And this so is much. Where we meet our high school style bullies, Jay and Ernie.
I believe his name is
Ice.
That's one of the parts that made me laugh is when he goes, I told you, man, call me Ice. And then he turns around and Ice is shaved in the back of his head. And the long haired bully's like, this is Ice. But this has to be, this might be my favorite line in the movie is when they ask him, you know, do you have a cigarette? Let's smoke. But the way he asks him, or he says, hey, let's have a butt.
I knew that you would love that. Like, Chris is dying right now.
Wouldn't? Because... This is probably the most extreme example of everybody that worked on this movie. Like, I've never met a child. It's just, you know what it reminded me of is when I was 17, my family went on vacation in Hawaii and we were, you know, one night the parents said, okay, you guys can go into town. You can go into Lahaina and walk around and we'll meet you back here at this time. So I'm walking around with my two sisters and there's this group of ruffians just sort of hanging out, smoking cigarettes, looking all cool. They're a couple years older than us. And they just like singled in on me immediately, like because not just I'm a tourist, but, you know, I'm a young kid. I had like hair down to my shoulders at that point. And so I guess they assumed, oh, this guy, he must be gay. And so as I walk past, like the leader of the pack goes like kind of under his breath, like to make his friends laugh. But I still heard him. He goes like, he's like, hey, want some butts? And I walked away. I was like, I don't even think I can be offended or like mad because that's fucking ridiculous. I'm going to remember that forever. And then we had to walk past them again and he did not fail to deliver. He goes, hey, still want some butts?
Oh, jeez.
I love not clever bullies. And then, well, they steal his shoes.
Yeah.
This is not a thing, though, right? Was this a problem when you guys were in school? Were kids getting their shoes stolen?
When I was a kid, a lot of kids were getting, like, their Jordans were getting stolen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, kids were getting shot for.
As soon as you said that, I remembered that being a thing.
Yeah. Jordans were.
But I don't think Ice wants, like, I don't think anyone was getting shot for their generic Nike cross trainers. He's like, yeah, nice cross trainers.
You know what? They probably just couldn't get the rights to use Jordans in the fucking movie.
But they did have Nikes. Like, they had the rights.
They were like, you really can't use our cool shoes, but how about you take these?
We've got kind of a publicity problem right now with kids getting killed for Jordans. So maybe just steal one of Professor lines.
No Jordans, okay?
Can they just have a butt instead?
How about a butt?
How about we'll all three of them just share a butt? How's that? Is that? I think that's safer. No one ever got shot over a butt.
That's probably not true.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. So Max hates Salem, but he goes home shoeless to the coolest room.
Wait, before we get to the room, I'm sorry. I got to throw this in really quick. When he walks past his parents, why'd you make me move here? And then the mom goes, you know, oh, he wasn't wearing shoes. And the dad goes, it must be some form of protest. Like what? Like he stands on the porch and he takes his shoes off. Like, I'll show them. My mom would have loved it if I remembered to take my shoes off in the house.
I will say that what struck me about this was the bullies took his shoes, but not his bike.
Yeah, I was expecting the bike to go.
Like, I would have expected him to walk home barefoot.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, maybe Jay is a decent guy, you know? Oh, you said actor. Well, maybe he's a decent guy, too.
There are limits.
Deep down.
The shoe's fine, but come on, man. The bike?
I'm not going to take his bike. That was expensive, you know?
Mm. His parents probably worked real hard for that.
Yeah. Hey, I know the value of a dollar, and that bike is worth something. Give me those shoes and get on your way.
Sorry. So
okay, the awesome bedroom.
Sort of like, yeah, that room is so cool. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I love that he went there to like sulk, and his room has an upstairs.
A sulking area.
It's a sulking area. Perfect for the at-home teenager. It's got that, it's a widow's watch is what it is, which I always dreamed of having when I was a kid. I never dreamt that it would be connected to my room, which is wild, but I just gotta say, if anyone out there knows of an apartment with a widow's watch with stairs in the bedroom, please email me, get in touch. I would really love to live there.
Well, there's no way that could work out terribly.
I'm just a single white female looking for a roommate.
Here's my email address. Give me yours. I'll come over, take a look at it.
I'll cut my hair to look just like yours.
I shouldn't even ask this, but have either one of you ever seen The Princess Diaries?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay. Isn't this her bedroom? Isn't this the same or a very similar bedroom to hers in that movie? Maybe I'm thinking.
Oh, I don't have it memorized.
Movie.
Yeah, I don't remember her room.
Me either, right? The fucking asshole. It's a stupid movie. Well, you know what?
Stop crying, Chris. Stop crying.
I'm just going to pretend it's laughter. These aren't tears. So in this scene, when he goes into sulk and you get the thing about, oh my God, somebody's hiding in the closet, but it's just Danny, the little sister. Mm-hmm. But she sees him dry humping his pillow and and he says, this is the line, oh, Allison, you're so soft. And then, so that's already like another installment of things kids never say or do. I'm not saying I never humped a pillow, but I certainly didn't like sweet talk at first. And but then the little sister, you know what? I did never hump a pillow, Mom. Don't listen to the little girl comes running out and she goes, she lays on the bed in front of him and she goes, kiss me, I'm Allison.
Yeah, that was weird.
And for
that
a moment,
weird.
I'm thinking, go for it. Like, this is one of those things where if I had too much money and nothing to spend it on, make this movie and set it up exactly the same way. I don't change anything except this scene. She says, kiss me. There's a pause. And then he just gets all up in there. They just make out for like 5 minutes.
She's like 6 years old.
Yes, I know. That's part of what makes it
terrible.
So then he gets up.
He wipes his lips, and the movie continues like normal. And every parent just sits there like, this is going to be tough to explain. Terrible.
It's like the one frame of penis that you get in the Fight Club movie. Like, did I just see that? Did that just anyone else just see a brother totally make out with his younger sister? The movie seems to not be noticing that this happened.
Well, this is the beginning of a really unusual undercurrent in terms of like sexuality that runs through the film. Not, I don't mean like over sexualizing these kids or anything. Certainly not like, you know, what I just described, but I mean in terms of having some strange ideas about sex in general or what's titillating or how kids interact with one another. I mean, the
what
fact
you,
that
you just described though is illegal. Let's just be clear about that.
That's just pretty bad.
But he's underage too. I think it's fine. No.
Do not test that theory, Chris.
No.
No, but here, so this is, but listen, this is something I actually do want to talk about though, to see if you guys notice this too, is, yeah, I mean, the moment with the girl saying, kiss me, I'm Allison, feels a little misguided and strange. And then just the fact that nobody can drop, like, the whole I'm a virgin thing. Like, people, it's like the craziest thing in the world to everyone else that this kid is a virgin. And they keep bringing it up. And they keep teasing him for it. And it's become such a, like, the last line of the movie is a zinger about his virginity.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know how old he was supposed to be, but I figured about 14.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so it was super weird to me that they kept, like, making it a big deal. Because it's like, yeah, you should definitely expect that this kid has never had relations.
I mean, like, a virgin needs to light the candle. And then, okay, so he lights the candle. And then maybe one joke about him actually, you know, oh, you were a virgin. But it, I mean, this keeps coming up all the time. Like, throughout the whole rest of the movie.
You almost wonder if the original script intended for it to be, like, older kids.
You almost wonder if the original title was, Why Aren't You Fucking?
Well, well, there's that.
A Disney motion picture.
Walt Disney sense. Why aren't you fucking?
Yeah. Well, okay. So, at first, when Danny says, kiss me, I'm Allison. It was a little jarring to me. And then I took a second and thought about their ages. And she's, like you said, maybe 6 or 7 years old, while he's about 14. And I think personally at that age, at like 6 or 7, you sort of know what sex is, or you sort of know a little bit about sexuality in that you see it in other people. You don't really understand it, but you maybe mimic it. Like, I'm sure that I did some mimicking of things that I definitely didn't understand because something about the tone was interesting to me. And something about, I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to do that. And I'm sure I made a lot of people that were older than me very uncomfortable and had to be like, whoa, don't, that's not something you say. and I didn't have an older brother, so that was never anything that happened in my life. But it makes sense in that way, and that she is so naive, but she also, she knows a little bit about it, and she sort of just wants to get his goat, and she sort of just wants to imitate that type of feeling. So
like,
that's,
or maybe like as a little sister, like purposely trying to gross him out.
Yeah. I'm
like,
yeah,
kiss exactly. Me and then, oh, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. She is she's a great little sister character that she's always kind of aggravating him and making things a little bit harder for him. But you have to love her because she's so endearing.
Yeah. I don't know if we've even mentioned yet that it's Thora Birch, but
no, we haven't.
I totally forgot that it was. Oh, you did?
I did. Thora Birch. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she, so he has got to take her trick-or-treating is the thing about Max and Danny. He's got to take her out. Mom and Dad aren't going to do it. They're going to go to this party. It's going to be real cool. And so he's stuck with his little sister, even though he hates Halloween. He had a terrible day, and all he wants to do is hump his pillow.
Yeah.
Of course.
We've all been there.
She's the little sister, and she, of course, gets her way. He's got to take her out. So they are trick-or-treating, Max is pouting his way through it. And who do we run into? Of course, Jay and Ice.
Ice.
Mm-hmm. Ice.
Still wants butts.
Still wants butts. They are stealing candy from kids, which is awesome. Always an admirable feat. But they, of course, run into Danny and Max. And Danny stands right up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Says, no, absolutely not. You can't have my candy. And you know what? Don't even try to mess with me because my older brother is here. Which is mortifying for Max. These guys already took his shoes. They're wearing them right now. And they're going to kick his butt with his own shoes on. And I don't know. He does some big brother stuff. And they figure it out. It's all right.
Did you guys ever, Don, I know you were an only child, but Carlos, I don't remember if you have younger siblings.
All of my siblings are younger.
Did they ever get you in any fights?
No.
Oh, my little sister. Oh my gosh. My sweet little sister, Erica, I love you, but oh my goodness. In high school, she told this kid, Tom, and I kind of want to mention his last name in the hopes that this like gets back to him that I'm apologizing because I still think he thinks I want to kill him. And I had no idea who this kid was. And my sister just came home from school one day and was like, have you ever heard of, you know, Tom so-and-so? And like, he's in your grade, so not really. And I was like, why? I told him you were going to punch him in the face. I was like, why? And she's like, I just don't like him. I was like, what in the world? And then she expressed no remorse for this. Like, a few days later, she comes home and she's like, so I passed Tom in the hallway and he did this. And she makes this motion of like him hitting himself in the jaw with like kind of inquisitively like, yeah, this is still on the table. And she just, she nodded at him all ominously like, you better believe it, buddy.
Oh, my God.
And meanwhile, I'm walking around the same. I'm passing this kid in the hallway, not having any idea that he thinks I'm going to punch him in the face.
Oh my gosh,
that's horrible.
But see that right there? I mean, that is the power of having a big brother. That is, I am an only child, and that is a huge part of. And not so much that I would, you know, threaten that he
just
would
random,
anyone.
Just random people. Just point there, that one.
That would kill him.
For no reason.
No, I think that having an older brother gives you a sense of security. Maybe it's false, maybe it's not. But there's always something about like, well, my older brother. Well, my brother's got my... Well, if you mess with me, I have an older brother.
Yeah.
And I think you see this again and again. At least I see it. I notice it. I see it everywhere because I don't have it. So It always seems to me that there's sort of a confidence that comes with it, that you sort of have someone looking out for you. Even if your older brother is a total wimp, he's still an older brother. I had several friends who had older brothers, and there was something about it that was like just sort of a confident, like, okay, you know what? He's not cool and he's not tough. He's sort of a nerd in his grade, but still, you know what? My brother has a car and yours doesn't. My brother has friends and yours doesn't. And
gee,
you know what?
This is getting dark, Donna. What's
going on here? I know. My youth group was a rough place to be, I'll tell you that.
His car has a trunk that fits your body.
He's got rope and a bag.
I do think that this scene was like super sweet, the way that she was so proud of the fact that she was with her older brother.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, that's adorable because
it's
her brother is mortified, but she's like, my older brother's here, so don't even mess with me.
Totally relatable. I'm going to say, okay, so as much shit as I'm giving this movie for moments that feel inauthentic, this feels very real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when good moment. Well, to skip ahead like 12 seconds in the movie, when the brother's like, just get out of my life.
Oh.
And she, like, her heart breaks, and you feel so bad for her.
So
or at least
sad.
I did. Maybe you took joy in it.
I mean, that's another thing that I liked about her, too, is that, you know, she teases him, and she gives him a hard time. But then the second you know, he says something like that and you realize like, oh no, man, she kind of worships this dude.
Exactly.
Adores him.
Yeah.
Adores
exactly.
Him.
That's why I just, yeah, her and the talking cat, I think are like, I'm with them, man. Like that, the movie should have been about the girl and her talking cat sidekick and
yeah.
versus the witches. Like, cause I like her so much better. I just want to say really quick, we have to mention, so when, because the house she goes and lays down and cries at turns out to be Allison's home. Like they walk up, mm-hmm. but before they go to the door, they like, oh my God, check out this house. Check out this normal, modestly sized suburban home.
At any rate, so they stumble into this fancy party at this fancy regular sized, nothing special about it house. And it turns out that it's Allison, the super hottie's house. And she has on maybe my favorite Halloween costume of all time. After that, I always wondered why I couldn't wear that costume for Halloween. Very fancy, old timey costume.
Very fancy.
Just really not accessible to 11-year-olds in average walks of life. At any rate, so they have some cider.
Well, they drink from cups that are clearly empty.
Okay, so she agrees to take the brother and sister to the Sanderson sisters' old house, which was a museum and was closed due to spooky occurrences. So they pack up their stuff and go over to the Sanderson sisters' house. Wouldn't you know it, there is a full moon. And of course, we have discussed Max is a virgin. And sure enough, he cannot resist but light the black flame candle. And boom, ladies are back. The kids manage to grab the spell book and escape. And Thackeray Binks, who we finally meet in the modern era, as of course the talking cat, comes along to explain the finer points of the reanimation of the ladies. This is also where we head to the cemetery, hallowed ground, which witches yep. don't like, of course.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And obviously, that's where Thackeray explains, I believe you mentioned earlier, Winnie's ex-boyfriend, Billy Butcherson, who Sarah messed around with, and so Winnie killed him and sewed up his mouth. Which to me, I really feel like, among sisters, okay, bad, you don't want to do that, but I sort of think Sarah is, she's all over every man in this movie, it does not matter, any kind right. of boy, she, so I don't think it even, like, hit her radar when Billy was killed, I don't think she minded at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and I think killing Billy was much more important, and she probably just whacked Sarah and was like, stop talking, or whatever she said.
I was confused by two parts of the sequence.
Yeah.
One, why didn't they burn down the Sanderson house after they hanged the witches? It just seems like that would have made a lot of sense. If children died there, like, I would have thought
it would have been bulldozed years
right,
ago.
Right, Puritans would have burned that place to the ground. And two, could the cat not talk when he was originally turned into a cat?
Yeah, that was weird.
Because he could have just said, hey, Dad, I'm a cat now. But instead, he just kind of scratched at him.
Yeah, and yeah, maybe he hadn't figured it out yet.
It's nitpicky, but I was just like, "What? Why can't he talk now?" I totally forgot that he could talk. When he talked, I was like, "Oh, wait, what? You can talk?"
Yes, same reaction. What I wanted to say about the house really quick was that it's funny that like they've got this awesome, creepy old cottage. It sort of looks like, you know, something from Hansel and Gretel or whatever. Really, really cool design. It's sort of weird that there's like no hike through the woods to get there. It's just right off the street. Like there's usually some sort of build up as they approach a house like this. But if you lived in this town and attempted this with your friends, it would be like, legend has it that we're here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Legend has it. If you make a left at the Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay, so the girls are back. and the kids manage to escape with the spell book. And the witches, and to me, this is where this premise gets a little bit of traction. That they're so confused immediately by the 20th century.
Yeah.
Max is able to pull one over on them because he has a lighter in his hand. He turns on the sprinkler system, which, okay, how long has this museum been closed down? And why is there still electricity going to it? Because I feel like if you're going to shut something down, you need to shut off the power. Otherwise, Amen. You're just paying money, just wasting money. At any rate, he manages to get the sprinklers going. They don't understand what the road is. And they make fast friends with a very friendly bus driver.
a little rapey, that bus driver.
A little rapey, this guy. I don't know if we should really let him be driving buses. But, you know, what have you.
There's no screening in Salem.
No screening for bus drivers in the 90s in Salem. There you go. But they are also very confused by this All Hallows' Eve. They don't understand modern Halloween. So Mary, Kathy Najimy, whose gift is smelling children, she can smell them, but there are none around. So she thinks she's lost her gift. It's terrible. And I guess all these kids are just dressed up, so they assume that they're literally just small ghouls and tiny princesses and things.
Right.
Then thank goodness they find Satan's house with Gary and Penny Marshall. Fantastic. I thought I got such a hoot out of them, calling Gary Marshall master and Penny Marshall's Medusa, and she sticks their tiny Yorkie on them.
Why are they in this man's home?
Because he's Satan, and so they're like, well, thank goodness.
No, I mean, from their point of view, sure. What is he doing?
He's inviting three women, including slutty Jessica Parker.
While his wife is home. Great plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the people of Salem, we've established, are way into Halloween. And it seems sort of like, well, they just walked right into Allison's house. The kids did. We're just like, oh, hey,
she
what's
was
up?
At least, she was at least having a party.
Yeah, I think he just sort of had an open door, haunty, housey, what the heck, come on in kind of a deal.
I have a question. Okay. Maybe you guys can answer. Am I not understanding? Gary Marshall is Penny Marshall's father.
Brother.
That's weirder. They played a husband and wife in this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Now suddenly what I described doesn't seem so weird. Yes, it does.
Okay. Oh. Fair enough.
Well, they're both a hoot. And they have a moment with the girls. But the witches figure out that they're actually not in Satan's house. Bummer. And they go out to find that their brooms have been stolen. Double bummer.
By girls dressed as them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, which is delightful, I think. Because you can color code them. You're like, hey, I want to be Winifred. Who will ever know that I'm Winifred? Oh, I know. Everyone, if I wear the green cape. Brilliant. Brilliant. So a bunch of these. We're coming up on one of my favorite scenes, which Chris knew immediately. So way to go, brother, for knowing what is up in my mind. But so many of the adults in this town have gone to this fancy schmancy Halloween hip happening party at Town Hall. And
a swingers party, in my mind.
The swingers, it's basically a swingers party.
It kind of looks like the party from the end of Groundhog Day, just with costumes.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
Okay.
At least.
Well, that's kind of interesting because I'm spoiling it, but eventually they get, isn't the spell to make them dance forever?
It is, yes, yes.
Mom's costume.
Yeah, right? Mom. Wow.
And the thing that I thought was funniest about this scene is so they run in to warn the parents about what's going on, and so they split up, and the dad finds Max, and then Danny runs off and bumps into her mom. So the weird thing is that, like, mom and dad aren't even dancing with each other.
Yeah.
Like, she's off twerking on the Wolfman, shaking her space cone zippity doodahs all over the place. It's just
they're mingling. They're new in town. You know, they want
to
find
a way to make friends.
The good swingers. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Dad is Dadula, which I thought.
Well,
so
then he like totally gives seductive looks to that girl.
I know, because she looks like she's in college.
Yeah, she probably was.
But in terms of this scene, and this is like, you know, the big musical number where the witches come in, and when Max says like, oh, that's them, don't listen to them, whatever, whatever. And everyone else just thinks, ah, the Sanderson sisters, what great costumes. These are the best ones yet. And so she starts singing this song. And like you mentioned, it's the I Put a Spell on You. For me, it's like 50% the fact that it's a musical number, and in movies that aren't musicals, that to me is always just a little like, why? But that's just me. The part of it that it's kind of like, just even contextually in the film, how does she know the words to this song?
She's a witch. She just know that stuff.
Three moons.
Yeah. At any rate, we leave the party and the kids are racing to the school, where they manage to trick the sisters into going into the kiln. Kiln. It's hard to say that.
It's got the word kill in it.
Kiln. Of course, they're burned alive, which is a natural leap for young high schoolers to make. We're
and they
in trouble.
Watch it's it burn them happen. Alive. They watch
it's
it.
Super dark for a
it's
Disney
too.
Movie.
Yeah, not only do they watch them die, then they run outside and celebrate.
Yes! They're dancing about all the. It's really quite something.
I would be mortified if I saw three people burned to death, right? No matter how awful they were. Like, I think I just flick that switch and look away. Maybe look back, make sure there's ashes, and then But I don't think I'd be singing a song about it. I think I'd have to just give me a minute, guys. We just fucking murdered three people. Hold on.
Saw these three girls get burned alive and hanged. In the same 40-minute span?
Yes.
Regardless of how long we've been talking about it, the movie is probably only about 40 minutes in at this point.
Correct.
Yeah.
When you think about it, there are some really little gruesome kind of moments there.
Pretty
That's
dark.
Definitely the worst of them, I think. I don't know. So the kids are celebrating because they think that the witches are dead. Of course, they're not dead. They're just a little bit gassy. Shot up the plume and in the ether for a little while till it cools down, I guess, and then they're whole again. Just storm out of there and go right back after him. At this point, Max and Alice, everybody feels safe. Witches are dead. Ding dong. So they all go home, and Danny cuddles with Binks, and Max and Allison fall asleep on the stairs, which is.
There must have been some note at Disney, like, you can't show them in bed together.
Exactly, yeah. So that's sort of what I was thinking, but its stairs still seems really uncomfortable. That had to be a very uncomfortable day of shooting because, ow! So, yes, okay, so the witches are out of the kiln, and they head home angry, defeated. They don't know where these kids have gone. They can't find the spell book, so they can't make the potion, so they can't stay alive beyond sunrise. Of course, they pass Jay and Ice on the way home.
Oh, my God.
And these boys, fools that they are, call the witches ugly. Bad move. They put them in tiny cages.
They call them chicks. That's what they freak out about. I remember being surprised by this.
Ugly chicks.
Bette Midler's like, chicks? It's like, oh, she's a feminist witch. I like it.
She can't hear
Very
the word
progressive
ugly,
for 1693.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Witches were always not chicks, I guess.
No.
So they hang them up in these tiny cages, which is where they spend the rest of the movie. Mm. Wonderful. Always fascinated me.
Wonderful.
I was like, I can't believe, how did they get them up there in those tiny cages? But, you know, these are discussions for another day.
Telekinetic lightning. Yeah.
There you go. That's probably how. I guess I could know the answer right now. Feels good. Just feel good.
Thank you.
So the sisters are all bummed out. These two kids are in cages. Allison just wakes up, realizes it's 5 a.m. She's totally in trouble. It's got to go home. And up to this point, I feel like she has been a really reasonable, level-headed character. She's pretty much done the right thing, you would say, in most of these situations they've been in. She's been a voice of reason. And all of a sudden, she wakes up and decides they got to open this spell book. The exact thing that Binks was like, never do this. Never do it. You're an idiot. Don't open that book. She's like, well, let's just open the book. So she and Max open this book. A beacon of light shoots out of it. They're trying to figure out how to turn Binks into, I guess basically how to kill him or how to make him a human and then kill him. Or I'm not sure what exactly they're looking for, but they want to help Binks. They open this book and this beacon of light shoots out the Widow's Watch. And the sisters, of course, see it. They know where the book is. They know they can get there. They know they can get him back. So they head straight over on their hoovers and mops, etc. And Danny is still asleep, but Max and Allison go downstairs. They're going to go walk home at 5 a.m. on Halloween, because why not? And they say, oh, something doesn't feel right, something doesn't feel right. And they go upstairs to check on Danny. And when they pull the covers back, SJP, I gotta tell you, I jumped out of my skin. I did. As an adult, she goes, you know, she's, ah! And I jumped. And then I laughed at myself because that was silly. I know that was silly. But it scared me a little bit. And so the other witches are in the closet, and they've got Danny, and they're going to take her. They're going to eat her. Yeah, there's nothing that anybody can do about it. They knock Max over, and Allison's got salt, so she's like, whatever. We don't care about you anyway. And they leave. They take Danny, and they go. Winnie and Mary go back and start cooking this evil potion. They tie Danny up, and Sarah goes out and sings this enchanting song, wakes all the children up, sort of, in a way. They're in a trance, and all the children in Salem are starting this march to the, well, right around the corner from the Dunkin' Donuts, where the witch's house is. So they all go over there. Kids are all walking. Max and Allison don't know what to do. They're trying to figure out how they can save Danny, how they can stop these evil witches. So they decide technology, again, is the only thing that's ever worked. So they decide they're going to create an artificial sunrise. So they take a car, which is probably, yeah, he's got his, like, learner's permit or something. So they take this car, and they shine the headlights into the sister's house. And immediately they are... The sisters freak out. I'm burning. It hurts me. Ow, 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 ow. That's just enough time for Max to come in, untie his sister, grab Binks from above the fire, and knock down the cauldron of potion. Yeah, so that's what happens. He does that. And sisters are all on the floor. They don't know. They think they're burning to death. And, of course, he drives away, and they realize they're still there. Nothing happened. They've just been tricked. So they now have all these kids arriving with nothing to feed them. How uncomfortable.
I gotta run out to the Costco.
Which conveniently is only a block away.
Right.
So this is sort of goes into the climax of the movie. They realize they only have enough potion left for one child. And boy, that Winifred knows exactly who she wants to give it to, because Danny called her ugly. She couldn't stand her sass. So even though she's got literally hundreds of children right there who she could easily suck the life out of, nope, it's got to be this one girl. Chasing him to the cemetery, of course, where you go when you're running from the witches. You go straight to the cemetery. And it turns out... Winnie's old boyfriend, the butcherman, has been stalking them. She brought him back to life, you know, to try to get the kids. He's not been very good at it so far. He's pretty much just, like, pretty tired, which I always sort of was my impression of what being a zombie would actually be like. It's just like, oh, seriously, you woke me up for this? Like, what?
Well, his best moment is when he wakes up. When he wakes up from the dead, he looks at his gravestone and he's like, oh, are you serious? his look is not like fear or anger. It's just like, no. You have to be kidding me.
Bummer.
I'm dead.
Do you know that's Doug Jones?
I did not know.
Who is that?
He's famous for
Golden Army. I knew him from Golden Army.
Yes, he's in most of Guillermo del Toro's movies. Mm-hmm. Always playing like weird creatures and stuff.
He plays Abe Sapien, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And does the voice for him in the second one.
He's also the character in Pan's Labyrinth with the eyes and his hands.
I think he's a couple of characters in that, but yeah, he's definitely that's the guy.
That's just the creepiest thing I've ever seen in a movie is the dude with eyes and his hands.
Oh, yeah, he was great. I loved his Billy the Butcherson.
Yeah. I love Billy stuff.
Yeah, so he finally kind of catches up with everybody, and he grabs this little knife that Max has in his hands. And everybody's so afraid. Max is so afraid. This zombie is going to kill me. He grabs a knife and cuts his mouth open, Billy's own mouth, which has been sewed shut by Winifred. Coughs out a bunch of dust and I think just pretty much tells Winifred off. He's, you know, sick of her. He's been sick of her. She killed him, for heaven's sakes.
Right, and I'd be sick of someone if they did that to me.
The mouthful of dust that comes out when he first starts speaking is a nice touch.
It's so gross. Yeah, it's so... That's got to be how it feels, right? You know, you wake up after, like, you know, in the morning, you haven't brushed your teeth yet. Imagine that times 300 years, right? Ugh. Nasty. So he's obviously, they realize, okay, well, this guy's on our side. So they get one more on the old team. And here's where we really, really get into it. So the witches are kind of dipping and darting low, close to the ground. They swoop and they grab the children. They knock off Billy's head. Dani goes to help Billy, which is her big mistake. She had been in a grave surrounded by salt, which in theory would have made her totally safe. But she feels really bad for him because his head fell off and he's trying to look for it, which has got to be kind of sad to watch a headless man try to find his own head. So she gets out and she's like, here you go. Here's your head, Billy. And of course, right then she gets grabbed.
Mm-hmm.
Winnie is about to pour the potion down her throat when brave little Binks jumps up on the broom and is able to knock it out of her hand. And Big Brother Hero Max catches a vial and drinks it. So now she has to take him and release his sister. Big, big brother moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She grabs him. It's fine. I don't care. It's really late. I gotta get somebody's life, so I'll take yours. So she starts to suck his life out. He's grabbing at her. She's got him on her broom, like holding him. She loses her balance. Mary comes over to help, but the kids on the ground grab the cord of her vacuum cleaner. And Sarah comes to help, and an epic tug of war ensues between the witches and the kids as Winifred is sucking the life out of Max. Then, just over the horizon, it is the Sahara sunrise of your dreams. This sunrise was from absolutely another place. So Winifred is knocked over onto the hallowed ground, and the sun hits her, and she becomes this pretty cool statue, I always thought. And she's still holding on to Max, so he rips his shirt and gets out of there. Sarah and Mary both turn to dust, and everybody's safe. Except for that Binks is dead. I know. Dani is so sad.
This is a real downer for, like, you're minutes away from the end. But, you know, yeah. I was thinking earlier when she's sleeping, or when, you know, her and Binks are lying down, and I don't know if it's that scene or right before where she's telling him, I'm going to take care of you, and then my kids are going to take care of you, and then their kids are going to take care of you. And I was thinking, like, this guy's life is a fucking nightmare. You're going to watch everybody you care about die. I thought, poor Banks, man. It's like, and then, so as much of a bummer as the ending is, it's kind of like, this sort of actually is the happy ending for him.
It's so happy. He's instantly there. You see his ghost. As soon as Danny's sad, his ghost comes and says, Danny, don't be sad. Thank goodness I'm finally with my family again. And you see little dead Emily, and she's so happy to be with her brother again. So that's what I call hocus pocus.
All right. Well, so final thoughts on the film?
I still think it's a great time. It is a very clearly, you know, a lot of the movies that we watch, and a lot of what's so cool about this is when you watch a movie and you realize, okay, I love this as a kid, but there is so much that really does stand up as a great film or as a great, you know, can kind of be applied to any audience or any time. This is not that movie. It's just not that movie. This is for sure a kid's movie. Now, if you grew up watching it, you're probably still going to love it. And I think if you're a kid today, there's a lot that you could still love about it. If you're the right age, if you're, you know, between 8 and 11 and a girl, probably going to love it. Mm. I don't think adults probably ever loved this movie. I'm sure they tolerated it and, it wasn't so bad. It's not the worst that it could be. It's not great. It's not deep. It's not, overwhelmingly important in any way. It is a lot of fun, and there are a lot of great female characters. I have a bunch of nostalgia for this movie, so it's absolutely still ranks as something I really love to watch, and I would absolutely share with younger girls around Halloween. But no, I know it's absolutely not going to be like one of the best movies I've ever watched, and it's not going to be artistically that impressive. But I think that's okay,
and I don't, you know, obviously not every movie has to be. And again, I'm really worried that, you know, the stuff I said, it makes it sound like I was expecting too much from the film, and that's not the case at all. It's just as simple as like I understand that a lot of people love this, and I'm not discounting that because it means there really must be something here. It's just not, just whatever that was just didn't appeal to me, and it's no more complicated than that, really. So I feel bad because you obviously still like the movie quite a bit, and I feel like maybe you feel like you have to defend it because of the things I've been saying, and I certainly don't want to make you feel that way. You shouldn't have to defend loving this movie. You're nostalgic for it. It still is fun for you. That's totally valid. I think that's really great. And I mean, Lord knows we've looked at movies that you know, if I were trying to be objective about it, I could sort of say like, okay, well, so this probably isn't a great movie, but I still love the shit out of it. So I get where you're coming from. And so I just want everyone to understand that, this one was just a sort of different for me in that, like, I wasn't really into it that much as a kid. And I just didn't find it as fun as Donna did. But, Carlos, what about you?
I thought this was fine. I was not expecting it to be as enjoyable as I found it. I think we've said everything there's to say. Like, there is no character development in this. There is no, these characters are all very one-dimensional. But if my niece, who is about 7, wanted to watch Hocus Pocus, I would not be like rolling my eyes like, oh God, Hocus Pocus. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be, you know, more than fine. It's like, oh yeah, well, let's see if it's on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Do you guys want to play a quick game of who would you be and who would you F? I have one big group who would you be, and it's not really a group who would you F, but this sort of, as I was going along, I was thinking about the game, and I was like, well, man, I would be Bette Midler, right? Am I right? Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I gotta be Bette Midler. And I'm like, who would Carlos and Chris be? There's not many good guys, you know. Thackeray Banks, he's cool, but he's pretty much a cat. Ice, It's kind of, you know, his name is Ice. So my dream would be that I could be Bette Midler, Carlos could be Kathy Jimmy, and Chris could be Sarah Jessica Parker. Please dress up in drag in my imagination and bewitch sisters with me.
I don't think you need our permission for that. I think that's probably happening at this moment.
I have been talking out of the side of my mouth the entire podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wouldn't that be so fun?
Boy.
We could do the musical numbers. And Chris, you like Sarah Jessica Parker, right? She's fun. She liked her jokes. Yeah, this is going to be great.
She would also be who you would F, Chris. I know it.
I guess that's true. I was going to pick both of you F-ing that Allison because, wow, she's like a supermodel. But SJP is pretty good, too. So.
I chose for Donna, I absolutely chose. I said you were going to be Bette Midler and you wanted to F the long-haired bully.
Not a bad choice.
And then I said Carlos wanted to be Ice and and wanted to F Mom. I know both of those are totally, totally wrong. It was just for the sake of variety.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, Carlos, who would you be? Who would you F?
So I would – it's always tricky with movies about kids because you're like, well, I mean in the world of the movie, if I was the boy, I would totally like want to F the girl. But
sure. Well, like Sarah, I think even in this case, she's was definitely like in her 20s.
Are we sure?
Not about well. This? Yeah, maybe we should double check.
Yeah, I'm just going to take the safe side and say Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay.
In this and the thing is I don't know who I would be because like the guys are total pud. He's a pud and his dad is an idiot, so like I mean male characters are straight, you know, just gone. And Thora Birch is probably the best character in the movie, but she's so little and so vulnerable to witches. But I would be Danny. I would be Thora Birch.
Oh.
And FSJP. Those are exactly my answers. That's the same for me.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I think that's it for us. Let us know if you have any other suggestions for other movies we should watch. Subscribe on iTunes, like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next. And we'll see you next time.